Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And each week on this program, I explore the unfolding spiritual culture that's happening in America, around the world. And no one, I think, represents that better, this unfoldment of a new consciousness, a new understanding of the human being, than tonight's guest, the painter Alex Gray. And his wife, Allison, have built an amazing, and are building an amazing chapel to the spiritual being, to the of sacred mirrors. And that's in Wappinger Falls. And there's lots of projects all over the world. He has a new book out called The Net of Being. Alex, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you, Alan. I'm really grateful and honored to be conversing with you once again.
Yes, it's always great because besides being a great innovative painter, I like the way you think about ideas and philosophy and, you know, the world in general. So why don't we talk about the kind of overall mission that, first of all, that you are creating up at Wappinger Falls with this piece of land. So, like, let's start with, like, you were a painter. And now you're something bigger than that. So talk about that a little bit. What's going on there?
Well, I guess I still regard myself primarily as a painter, but the paintings became about the subject of my mystical experiences, and the mystical experiences would continue to evolve and reveal new vistas, and I would attempt to weave them into the artwork. And as that kept happening, then a kind of spiritual process, I think, was going on. And it culminated, really, first of all, in this insight that Allison had and inspired the sacred mirrors. And she named them as well. And it was basically a series of 21 works of art that flow through the body, mind, and spirit of an individual. So they kind of anatomize us into 21 layers. And each of the layers could, in some way, be seen as part of all of us. The different races and sexes are there as an opportunity to reflect your connectedness in a socio-political unity, really, to see yourself reflected in every other kind of person, and to at least give you the opportunity to consider everyone as a potential sacred mirror. And so then you reach into the light body and the divine archetypes and things. The sacred mirrors embody, a mystical experience Allison and I had back in 1976. So,
well, can I just ask you one?
All of that.
I just wanted to ask you, because just one question that comes up, and something I've been writing about: did the portrayal or the depiction of these spiritual experiences help you solidify it? Like, as an artist, bringing that into form, what was the relationship of the painting to the experience? Or was it just kind of like, this is what happened? Or did something happen in that mixing of mind and creation?
Well, of course, you attempt as frictionless a download if it's really a theophany. You don't want to, you know, kind of get too personally involved in it. You know, you try and, but inevitably you are, because you're a lens, you know, and you're a human lens, and you have your own idiosyncrasies and whatnot. So I'm sure there's distortions in the filter, but I just, like when you hear the voice of an angel or something like that, you really would like to be as you know, straightforward as possible. You don't want to go editing them too much, you know. And so in the same way, you want to, if you have a clear image, then you want to try and reproduce it because you feel like it was a gift. And so that's the, if you can share something that for many people is one of their most important experiences of their lives, their confirmation that spirit exists, that, you know, God is real, that they're connected with a greater whole. And the sense of unity is the number one hallmark of the mystical experience.
Well, so, I just want to comment that no one has, in a way, done it better than you, I think, and that's why you are as popular than solidifying a spiritual experience or making known the other realms with the sacred mirrors and with the other paintings you've done. Theogony, is that one of them?
Theologue.
You're right.
The
right
guy
right.
with the meditating guy in the perspective field, which is, I mean, it did kind of coin some iconography that has been repeated in, now I've seen in numerous visionary artists' works. But I think that it was more or less just pointing out something that a number of people had told me they had seen. You know, when I had painted it, then they said, oh, that's exactly like, you know, an experience I had, either meditating or some journey or something.
Well, I think that's the role of the artist, is to concretize experience and substantiate it for those who have yet to articulate what happened to them. So you are, in a way, making known the unknown and creating these realities for people who are vaguely aware of some other sense. So, I mean, I think it's such an important
job. I wouldn't say I'm creating the realities. I'd say I'm attempting to evoke or point to the realities. And because I'm not trying to invent them. I am trying to portray them because I feel like they're real. It's just that they're inner.
But you're perceiving them in a way, in sort of a new way. I mean, of course, they've always been there, and it's your interpretation, but you've kind of, it's become an anthem in a sense, or the kind of signature for the age we're moving into, this age of spiritual awareness. I mean, you're portraying what's there, but before you portrayed it, it didn't really exist in a form where people can point to.
Well, one of the interesting things, of course, because this was like way before computer stuff, and of course, if I had access to computers today and things and had the vision just the other day, I probably would have resolved it in a different way. But given my painterly attributes, it's always surprising to me how even something as two-dimensional as a painting can evoke a multi-dimensional experience, because these visionary and mystical unity states typically transcend the normal sense of space and time. So first of all, you have to point beyond the physical dimension. You have to integrate the subtle energetic realms, at least. And a lot of the early holy or sacred art from both the Buddhist and Hindu and Christian traditions point to the light body in their halos and auras and things like that. It's holy people glow. And so we know that from sacred art. So a lot of the shamanic cave art had X-ray figures I've always felt, even though my figures are kind of x-ray and they glow and things like that, you could say, oh, that's kind of futuristic. In a lot of ways, it looks back at ancient and even prehistoric art in its visionary alliances.
I mean, do you get that those shamans were aware of the realities? I mean, I guess they must have been that you.
Of course.
Yeah. Right. So then we sort of fell from grace, didn't we? And we had to go through this whole development to get us back where you're bringing us there along with many other people, but you're creating now a sanctuary to that sacred sense of the self.
Yeah. It's I think that looking back, I'm really, really grateful that they're in these ornate frames that Allison and I sculpted, and that the frames feature a kind of philosophical framework that really portrays evolution. And so the idea going from kind of cosmogenesis and Big Bang in the at the very basis or foundation of the sacred mirrors is this kind of let there be light moment or explosion of a cosmic sun that spews out as little galaxies, and then there's the Earth and or the solar system, and then the Earth, and then the DNA coils out of that. So it's a sequential suggestion then of, you know, unicellular, multicellular, and a progression in a very scientific framework of the evolution of biological species. And botanical, but then also technological evolution. So in the main, it points to a framework of cosmic evolution, and that consciousness and awareness of all of our dimensions is a strong part of becoming aware of the sacredness of our reality and how carefully we have to treat our relationship with the environment. So anyway, that's part of the goal of the sacred mirrors, in the sense it holds that mystical experience in there, which validates other people's kind of similar visionary experiences. We had been given a vision that it should be preserved in a kind of temple structure or sanctuary structure. And so hence was born the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors project. And the COSM, as its acronym, becomes a hearkening back to the macrocosm and the microcosm, and to try and find a new alignment with what I think is the coming on strong as a very powerful, unifying force, creative force, because it's not aligned strictly with one religion or another. You know, all the religions have, creativity, and science is as well. In fact, it seems like a quality of consciousness that underlies all manifestations of consciousness.
Well, in a way, the sacred mirrors are a tribute to the cosmic creativity, or the creativity and the manifestation of who we are as human beings, because they're life size, they're beautiful, and they're life size, and each figure represents a system in the body. I mean, you start with the basic elements, And then you go to the bones and the circulatory and the nervous system, the digestive system, all the way up to the, like you said, the different races and then the light bodies. But in front of each one, it reflects a sort of, open, you stand there with your hands open in front of these figures, and there's a sort of feeling of resonance, even with the biological systems.
It's weird. I mean, I really get it. It doesn't take that much imagination, really, to connect with them in that way, I don't think. And it's kind of a unique experience of the self. I mean, it's really an attempt to make a universal self-portrait.
Well, and you've made this multi-dimensional, multi-layered essence of the everyman, of the every woman, of the every person, you know, where it's every one of us in flesh and blood and spirit. It's such an easy progression that, in a way, I don't think anyone could argue with the fact that they're spiritual beings if you look at each one of those mirrors in progression. But I want to know. Yeah, mm-hmm. Go ahead. No, what were you going to say?
No, I thank you for really noting and having experienced them and having had such a profound connection with them. Alan, I really appreciate your getting that.
I told you my experience on the television show we did of really feeling my body turning into light. But when I looked at that mirror with the chakras spinning and, you know, the crown open and the feet open, I had, in a way, an awakening, like, oh, wow, that's it. You've done what I've been looking for. Or as a confirmation of something that was possible. You created the rainbow body right there. So, but the...
It's interesting. And I'm glad that it was a connection for us.
But, right. But I want to know then, in the building of the temple, you and Allison, how... I mean, people will stand in front of it, but since you're so creative, is there any thought being given, because it's starting to be planned and built up, how people will kind of have an amplified experience of the sacred mirrors as they enter the sacred chamber?
We've been planning it in to be, I think, much enhanced from its previous installation. And the ceilings, for instance, are planned to be much higher. It's now going to be on two stories. The collection has expanded some. And so many of Allison's pieces will be on display as well. We're going to have an exhibit of how we'd like to build the chapel. What we are currently planning is a building we call Entheon, which stands for a place to discover the God within. And so it will be our sanctuary of visionary art. We feel always it should be so. And when we build the chapel, which we hope to begin in 2020, if you know, the neighbors and everyone can agree that this can be done. I think we have to prove ourselves as an asset to the community first, mm-hmm. and we'll see how the progression of things goes. We have a unique building, Entheon, and it was a vision that I had. It shows a kind of 20-foot godhead that is connected, cladding the building with these heads, a kind of a continuous sequence of faces around the structure. So in a sense, it's one head of a multiple god, multiple godhead, the many becoming the one up at the top, There's a kind of a steeple head, I guess, of a one being, which is one of my four-faced kind of beings. And so it's a kind of visionary building, a big sculpture, really. And we're still getting permits. We're still working with the town to fulfill the all the different improvements we need to do to the property and the parking lot, et cetera. So,
I also want to say, anyone listening, if they want to contribute to this monetarily, that you are accepting donations, right?
Well, we are a church. Allison and I are started out painters, and then began this foundation for the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors. And this was a 501c3, which has been operating and still continues to operate. The currently our structure is also as a church. So we felt that creativity is a kind of, spiritual creativity is a kind of religious activity. And art is our religion. Creativity is a kind of spiritual force. And right. So that's what we celebrate. And we felt that churches are built by religions. And so we needed to become a religion and in order to build a temple.
Right. So I'm just saying, if people want to donate, they can. They can go to cosm.org and see how they can contribute to this beautiful unfolding structure. That.
Hey, thanks, Alan.
Sure. No, I
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it's really. Yeah. It's exciting. I mean, this has never been done before. The way that we're doing it is, I've drawn it, and then this amazing artist Ryan Tottle has been modeling it in 3D.
Oh, I met Ryan. Yes.
He's doing a fantastic job, and he's quite a talented sculptor. Then it's going to be printed out in foam and molds made, and the molds will then be used to cast concrete, a kind of what a green kind of concrete called Grandcrete, and it's a really, really strong stuff. So we have some wonderful builders joining us from North Carolina who would like to help us build the sacred space.
And then, but you're not going to build that till 2020, right?
Well, the what we want to build is Entheon. That is what I've been describing, this this what building clad in Godheads. Now, we are working on a bank loan, and we are working on fundraising. And we intend, if possible, and all permits go as hoped, then we would commence building in the coming year. And by the end of the year, hopefully, we'd have Entheon.
Oh, so you'll have Entheon, and then you'll start to raise more money to build the temple.
Correct.
Itself.
Yes. Then we will try to recover, actually, for a while.
Okay.
Because we'll have, we're going to need to borrow another $1 million and raise, basically another 0.5 in order to manifest it. So it's a serious amount of cash. It's not prohibitive. It's just serious.
And, right.
This is why you need a bank loan.
Right, right. And donations, and anyone who wants to contribute.
Yes.
to go, of course, every full moon, there's a celebration at COSM up in Wappinger Falls, New York. And any way you want, you can order art, Alex's work online as posters and T-shirts. And
all that money goes to support COSM. Alison and I don't take any of the money from merchandise anymore. But it does help to support the chapel project.
Yeah, and
I appreciate so many people have been so helpful already. Alan, it's amazing what's happened already. To have the space. The community loves it. It's amazing.
It's a miracle, but only because, I mean, you and Allison have done something to people in creating the sacred mirrors. You awoke in people to their true nature, and that was sort of a selfless gift for the planet. And that's what I feel. So,
We could have sold them, and it's funny because the collector who wanted to buy them also had given us MDMA or ecstasy, and it was was when that was still legal, '85 or something like that. Anyway, we take it, and we are celebrating in some ways the idea of selling the sacred mirrors to this guy, and then the trip is, I'm sorry, you've got to create the chapel of sacred mirrors. You know, you can't sell these, you know.
That's what came to you.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah. So basically he subverted the sale by tapping us into whatever angelic force wanted this to happen.
Well, this has become now, in a way, a life mission, is creating the sacred space for the sacred mirrors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can't think of a better, I mean, I don't think there's a better thing to do than creating a space where people will recognize themselves as the divine.
If we wake up to our own sacredness, there's a chance that we can wake up to the sacredness of the planet and our cosmos. And at that point, perhaps we'll work to save our environment.
Well, this is your piece in doing that, working to the waking people to the sacredness of themselves and everyone they see, each other, you know? So,
absolutely.
So,
a wonderful lifetime koan to roll around in the mind. How can I be more like a sacred mirror?
Uh-huh. Well, would you say you were influenced by your Tibetan practices, or is it more an innate feeling of that's what you do?
Well, I think that the Vajrayana is actually very, very close to the sense of what I would say is one of the highest realizations, you know, the Dzogchen, or any of the non-dual Advaita Vedanta, any of those perspectives, I'd say are really close to what I think is right on highest liberation kind of perspective, at least from my humble and lowly level. You know,
well, your perspective, your perspective, but I think that perspective has contributed to people understanding these lineages in a way as a visceral experience almost, you know?
Well, yeah, the beings that exist and are depicted in the Tibetan symbolism, Tibetan Buddhist symbolism, are quite actively, you know, present for the practitioners that work with them, and they call them in. And much of this, you know, a Western occult practitioner would recognize a similar kind of working with imagery, you know, to affect, in a sense, a magical result. But oftentimes they're about protection, or they're about healing, or they're about success in one way or another, or they're about attaining your own liberation for the sake of all beings. Ultimately, they say that's the highest intention, and that's why we ought to be doing anything.
Well, that is, in a way, why you're doing the chapel, is for the realization of all beings. I seems like that's exactly it.
Yeah. And there's a whole class of objects that had a nice talk with Robert Thurman about one time called Liberation Through Seeing. And so these are objects or even architecture that are supposed to plant a seed of liberation in the mind stream of the viewer just by, you know, their experiencing by their perception of it.
Well, you know, there's feng shui and vastu. Are you taking any of that into account in the building of the temple?
Well, you know, I have studied sacred architecture probably for a couple decades now, and in a variety of ways. And, you know, I'm not an architect or anything.
Right.
And so the ideas that I have are from visions. They're not from practicalities and things. So a lot of the additions that I am suggesting for this building and that are causing its unusual sculptural appearance are ornaments, you know, like they're sculptural ornament. They're not probably going to be structurally important. And I'm not sure, but that is at least the what I kind of understand at this point. And I think that they will, however, make an important difference in terms of our perception of it, because they are sculptural, and this is architectural. It becomes like a large sculpture, and the sculpture kind of takes over the building, but it is still a building.
Right,
but it's also a being.
It is a being, and that's the piece that actually is new for me. You're entering a being as a being in this building, and then will people get, or you're hoping people will get a sense of being in being in a being? Is that the vision you have?
Yes, being in the mind of God, if possible, you know, to see your world transformed, to see it from God's eye, wouldn't that be wonderful?
That does sound amazing. That's what I thought, you had something like that planned, or something in the actual space itself is transformational to the person in that space. Yeah,
absolutely, has to be that way, and it's unique. It's I haven't really seen any other structure exactly like it. And I'm not saying that that's great for sacred architecture, because I love sacred architecture of all traditions, you know. But it felt like it ought to be a little bit different, but it also ought to be, as much as possible, if you can, evocative of both the story of evolution and of a perspective where every religion and every mask of God is democratized, and all the religious traditions are given, in a sense, even though it's kind of unfair, equal billing as a different mask of God.
And that's the exterior, but in the interior, it's all the same, in a way.
It's the one truth through the universal human being.
Right. And that is the vision. So I like it. You're giving people the vision of what they are. On the outside, it's the mask. On the inside, it's the being.
Yes.
So, I mean, that in itself is a creative enterprise, creating that and, is that as satisfying, as creative to you as sitting in front and composing a new canvas, or is it different?
Well, it's more challenging. It's much more challenging. It's beyond me. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do it. And I'm in the unknown again. I know how to paint. I'm not saying I know how to, I'm great or anything, but I can paint, and I have painted before. I've never built it, so like that. You know, we've been renovating up here, and we've renovated three buildings completely and thrown millions of dollars into these structures. And now we're inventing something. Now it's a little different, even though it's not that crazy. You know, I think it's an interesting new structure, and I think it will actually attract attention.
Yeah, I hope it does. It should.
I hope so too. Yeah.
What did Allison say there?
She was speaking to a friend that wanted to get a hold of her.
Oh, I thought she was commenting on the okay, that in a way is a development. It feels much more real, the vision. I mean, it has always been, but now I feel like it's coming into form.
Yeah, it is. It's got I've probably had 20 different versions of this. Well, maybe not 20, but maybe 10 of this particular building, because it's been many different shapes. And, I had even announced something earlier this year, you know, new download after I came back from Egypt. It looks like this, you know, and I drew it and the shadow of the pyramid and the Sphinx. I just winked at me and whatever, you know. And I thought, wow, this is really cool, and I really liked it and everything. And then it was kind of like another one came, and it was like, oh, my God, this one's better. It's more memorable. You know, it's like, say what you will, the other thing was just not that memorable. And so this one's unforgettable. If you see a building like this, you'll never forget it.
Wow, I'm excited. So you feel downloaded even with your paintings. Is that what – over these years it feels like to you?
Oh God, yeah. No, I'm working on a few things. One of the things is I'm perking up a live painting that I'd done in Texas for a stage set in Chile. There's a Chilean kind of heavy metal festival. And this is a kind of, looks like an infinite wrathful deity kind of form.
That sounds great. I'd love to see that. That sounds really
like
great.
Mahakala kind of, if the head was infinite or something.
Wow. And of course, the Net of Being just came out, the new book. Is that out?
Not yet. You know, it's like, we've been agonizing a little bit, but it's probably not till November 15th is it really supposed to be available.
Okay,
so I'm still waiting for it, but we'll still have, you know, we'll have it in time for Christmas, and it is available pre-sale, so that, you know, you could be the first to get it, and I'll sign it, you know.
Send you a testimonial about it? Are you still looking
for it? Absolutely. I'd love that, Alan.
Okay.
I'd so love that.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, in a way, I've grown up spiritually with your work, like I think a whole generation since the 80s have been influenced and evolved in their understanding of themselves in coincidence with your work. You know, and it's part of the landscape of our times.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. I was just thinking as I was looking over more dozens of people who have it tattooed onto their skin. You know, hey, my work makes an impression on people. You know, literally.
That's fine. I know. I see people coming up to you and say, look, I tattooed this painting of yours on my arm. God. I mean, that's, what do you think about? I mean, what's your reaction? It's like, oh my God, why'd you do that? Or it's like, are you really honored? I guess you are
Of course. How can you be anything but honored?
I know.
Somebody who had at least their intention. And of course, you know, I always think like, well, there's always a little laser, you know, but the thing is what they've done is to say, I want to live with this. This is important to me to the point that I want it emblazoned on my flesh, and I want my most intimate friends to know of it. Right. So there's a devotion implied in the connection with the iconography that I think is striking and amazing. And I've only known Giger to have such a reaction.
Giger? The artist Giger. Yeah. You're much bigger, I think, than Giger. I mean, you're more well-known and more uplifting. Giger's
Come on. I think he's the bigger artist, you know. I mean, he got an Emmy. He got an Oscar and everything.
I don't know. But it's sort of like a dark scene.
Yeah, it's kind of dark. Yeah. Well, you know what? We heard about a mushroom that is a special kind of thing, and that they found growing around Chernobyl. And this mushroom actually absorbed the radioactivity from the soil around it. Wow. But it became hot itself. So it was radioactive. But it concentrated the radioactivity into itself as an, I think, act of compassion. It was cleaning the soil to enable other life forms to exist. And so in the same way, I think some artists who, you know, like Blake said, some are born to sweet delight, some are born to the endless night. And so some artists represent the endless night, and it's important to have a cultural mirror into that world, because we know it exists and we have to recognize it and deal with it and work with it, you know, transform it if possible, and
right.
At least recognize it and not be blind to it. And
But in this time, I do think this is a year of acceleration. I'm going to be in Mexico. I heard you're going to be in Mexico for December 21st. Yeah. I'm going to be down there too. And, at Chichen Itza with JJ Hertog and a bunch of people down there.
Wow.
Maybe we can all get together down there.
Wouldn't that be fun? We keep thinking that too. We're just learning like where we're going to be. And there's about 3 different conferences I hear, and one of them is on the Mayan Riviera, and I don't know what that means, but I think that's where we're going to be.
Yeah, I think it's down. You're going to be down in Tulum, which has some beautiful ruins down there. Maybe I'll visit you guys down there.
Want to see Chichen Itza, because that's what I think is like. That's where like the most amazing. That's going to be. But I hear the other pyramids are pretty cool, and you can see them from the beach.
Oh, you've never? Yeah, you can in Tulum.
I've never been there.
You never? Oh, Chichen. I was actually there right near the equinox, and you could see as the sun is setting, the blocks form a serpent tail, and the serpent. And as the sun sets, the serpent descends into the earth. It just filled me up. I had energy running through my body by watching that, because the sun was setting and the clouds were moving and the tail was appearing and disappearing and moving down into the ground, and then boom, it just hit the earth. It's remarkable. That's something your temple could do. Yeah.
Boy, that would be amazing. Well, that's the special thing with the Step Pyramid that they I think our building will be facing the cardinal directions. There will be we'll find a way to mirror the cosmos.
Right. But the reason I brought up the 2012 is because, I mean, and I feel it, it seems like everything is accelerating and everything's moving to a new point. And I was just wondering, I mean, in your downloads, which are, I mean, your art, but I'm sure there are other things. And of course, you've written a book, a couple of books, but your book of like poetry, art. What was the last one called? Art.
Music. Art.
Yes, ArtSum. Are you getting other types of downloads for this time and this epic moment we're in?
Well, I've always felt like the short answer is that the angels that I'm talking to see, you know, tens of thousands of years ahead for the human race, but also many challenges. And so I was hopeful when I heard that. Basically, they said, you're going to make it. But, you know, you've got a lot of work to do. And so it was hopeful. And it was also and encouraging. And I think that they mean to for that, you know, but they also, you know, our climatologists and things are extremely concerned. And the mycological networks, I think, are coming on strong as a neural net for the Gaian, you know, kind of mind. And they really, these mycelial webs have ways of communicating with each other and communicating over long and far areas, even to being aware of us as we walk in the woods. Uh-huh. And so this web of intelligence that even calls ahead and says, you know, human on foot or something, you know, to the rest of the plant kingdom. It's not dumb what's going on under our feet. Uh-huh. There is nowhere on earth that isn't intelligent and sentient in some by some transformed means. We heard from Paul Stamets that a fungus withstood a million rads in the Chernobyl and was eating concrete.
Wow.
Now that's a sturdy life form that,
right,
that can do that. And he said 650 million years ago, human beings diverged from the fungal kingdom.
Uh-huh.
So we have our neural net and our lymphatic system and so many things that have a network like structure that's evocative of the mycelial web. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the mycelial web is so similar to the neuro anatomy of the neurons and how webbed that is. And then you look at the you know, the inner cell structures of the you know, the microtubules of the cell, same kind of web. And you look into the dark energy and dark matter that is holding space together, and the way it's been visualized is as a kind of cobweb. So we see the web of clusters of galaxies it's not an illusion. There is clusters of galaxies that the universe, the cosmos is composed of. There's no question about it.
Right, and I've seen those clusters, and they do look like neurons in the brain.
Exactly, exactly.
But this is
the way consciousness works.
Right, but it feels like we're at a point of evolutionary leap, of transcendence, of something. Do you get any vision of that? Of what is our next phase?
Yeah, our next phase is to save the life web, what's left of it, you know, and to stop killing ourselves. You know, it's kind of like the evolutionary edge is, it is seeing the emergency that we're in. And it's saying, you know, we see the future and it's bleak without much effort, you know, that we'll need to unite. We'll need to reestablish our unity as a species and to say that we're not at war with nature, but that we recognize the sacredness of nature and that we want to work out a sustainable relationship with nature. It only makes sense. You can't be an adolescent forever and just wreck the home planet. You know, this is an alchemical experiment that has been going on for billions of years. And I might say that it's a unique planet in an entire cosmos of, you know, billions and billions of clusters of galaxies. You've got this alchemical experiment of the Earth and life on Earth. It's unique here. There's nothing else like it. You know, it's like, how could we even imagine wasting it? You know, it's we've got to reclaim the sacredness of the planet.
So the chapel, in relationship to this network of interconnection and this fungal network, how does that point there that you're building in Wappinger Falls reflect in a fractal way the whole of creation?
For one thing, we've got a lot of I think of them as working in league with angels. We've got a lot of visionary artists. We just had Amanda Sage, Randall Roberts, there's Michael Devine, Lawrence Caruana, we've got Oliver Vernon, we've got Mars One, Vibrata Chromadoris, Damon Sewell, myself, and there are some of the top visionary artists have been stopping by and even working collaboratively on works and the Mushroom Cafe. Now, the Mushroom Cafe is is muraling that's being done by numerous artists and collaboratively, and they're pointing to the medicine and the gourmet mushrooms and the chaga mushroom and the various kind of medicinals and things like this, because there's actually a tremendous amount of hope for cancer treatments from turkey kale and a number of other medicinal mushrooms that have been coming up to strengthen the immune system and all kinds of magical things, not just the psilocybin mushrooms. But the psilocybin mushrooms are another example of something that are quite probable have been important to humanity for millennia. And so I think that they are trying to reach out at this point and or any way that we can get the message, you know, that we need to wake up to the fight of the destruction of nature, and we will surely follow in its footsteps if we don't, you know, change some of our ways and this mature as a species. So I think people know this inherently. It's like you've got to be in serious denial to not feel that way. So creating a sacred space is like an alternative possibility. How about if you were in a sustainable relationship to nature, what would that look like? I'm not saying we are, but we're asking the question, trying to come with our artistic and community-type responses.
Well, I think that really covers a lot. I mean, the community, yes, the attention to the planet. And I do think providing a space for creative, artistic expression, I think that's the key to unlocking a potential that we have yet to realize, in a sense.
Well, yeah, and it's art, I think, that is connected with an evolutionary agenda could help evolve consciousness. And so that's what we need at this point. We need to tap into our creative energy. We need to evolve consciousness so that, and I guess I like to say that the redemptive mission of art is to, uplift humanity beyond our self-destruction.
Well, exactly. I mean, yeah, and well, that just gets us even with the playing field. I think really the ultimate is to give us joy. Yeah, liberation, yeah. Joy, a kind of sense of one's higher perspective. I mean, we're all artists being vessels for being downloaded by some divine impulse.
Absolutely. I feel the same creative evolutionary impulse runs through each one of us. And it's, you know, that's why I think that it's the sort of primary creative source, you know, that spiritual source. And that's the, for me, the rule, basically, you try and have an authentic visionary mystical experience and then translate it into a work of art.
Right.
And, that's how it goes. And if you're able to do that, and it's not necessarily within a conventional religious framework, it may still have value in terms of its ability to, and maybe even, you know, greater value because it taps into some primal archetypes that isn't confined to a particular
exactly.
Religion.
No, that's why I think your work has become so popular, because it's transcended any kind of official dogma, and it's become, in a way, part of the pop youth culture as icons of possibility and potential. And yeah. In a way, you've single-handedly revived painting as something for the people to embrace. What did Allison say?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Al. Well, Allison is wondering if we're coming to a conclusion.
Oh, we are.
And,
we are coming
to because that we actually had another meeting.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. I have so enjoyed and really thank you for letting me go on that.
No, it's very interesting for me. I just want to say that you're going to be at the No Fest in L.A.
Yeah.
October, what is that, 10th to the 12th?
Yes.
That's
we're really looking forward to getting out to L.A. again and being with many friends. It's going to be a beautiful event.
Oh, that's I interviewed the founder, Kayla Bartlett, last week. So that's look up NoFest, KNOWPHEST.com, I think it is. And where else you're going to do a full moon this weekend, the 29th of September.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put you in place. That's COSM, COSM.org. I look forward to connecting with you somewhere soon.
Yes, Alan. I love you. Thank you for talking tonight. It was really fun.
Yeah, no, I love talking to you, and maybe we'll do another interview. I'll invite you to some stuff in the city. Anything else you want to plug?
Maybe when the Net of Being comes out, we'll look and see if there's an angle we can talk about that.
Let's do a television show, of course, about plugging that book, for sure.
Okay.
All right. Well, maybe I'll see you this weekend or sometime soon.
That'd be sweet. All right.
Okay,
take
lots
care,
of love,
Alan.
To you and Allison.
You too, brother.
Okay.
Talk
to
bye
Alex.
Now.
Thanks, Alex. This is
you
Alan Steinfeld.
Thank you.
I'll just sign off, but you can hang up, and I'll give you guys a call. Or thanks a lot for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
No. Oh, God. Thank you, Alan. Thank you for finding an even late time, I know, for you as well. So
yeah.
I'm glad we talked. Thank you.
All right. I'll be in touch with you guys. My love to Allison.
All right. Thanks so much.
Good luck with everything that's coming down. Okay.
Thank you.
This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and I've been talking with Alex Gray, who is really, I feel, the visionary artist of our day. That's Gray, G-R-E-Y. You can look him up, Alex Gray, A-L-E-X-G-R-E-Y, .com. You can look up his vision of putting together a sacred chapel of this visionary art with him and his wife, Allison, at COSM. That's a chapel of sacred mirrors.org. That's COSM.org. They're open to donations to build this amazing structure that will be the embodiment of the divine, and people have some experiences there. I know just listening to people talk about his work and the paintings, I hear people in the galleries that they had these paintings showing at, say, this was the vision they had that they couldn't articulate it. So I think part of the value of Alex's work is articulating and depicting a lot of the vague experiences that people have yet to form, but they know they're having. So his work is part of creating an actuality, a grounding of experiences that people have only vaguely been aware of. So by seeing his work, and I recommend people see his work, there's an acceleration of one's own awareness of one's higher self. So I just think his work is beautiful and an important piece of our spiritual landscape. So thank you for listening tonight. This has been New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. If you want to reach me, go to newrealities.com, and you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening.